shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to another Shoot the Defence World Cup review brought to you by the FNX Network and the Life of A. I'm your host, Del, and my two guests this evening are somewhat of Shoot the Defence royalty. The first guest I'm going to introduce is a gentleman that has been on quite recently, Adrian Kajumba. Welcome back to the show, Adrian. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure, my friend. How you been?
Yeah, I'm very good, thanks. Enjoying this World Cup, actually, a lot. It's certainly one of the best of the more recent sort of three or four World Cups. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot.
That's correct. I agree with you. Now, my second guest is a gentleman all the way in Brazil. He hasn't been on the show for a good 4 years. A guy that we've missed so dearly. It's Mr. Marco Lima. My friend, where have you been? How you doing?
Recovering from the 7-1 shellacking we took from Germany, and I'm starting to get my confidence built up again. How's everyone doing?
I thought you'd have recovered by now. Did it hurt that bad?
For the first year, it did, yeah. After that, it got worse because we had that horrible spell with Dunga and losing two Copa Americas back-to-back, and that didn't do anything for our confidence either. But I think we're on the right track, stumbling a little bit, taking a little longer to get into our groove, but there's been improvement from game one to game two, so I'm happy about that.
Absolutely. And are you a little bit unhappy that the Republic of Ireland aren't in the World Cup? Because I know you spent a few months there, or a good year.
Oh, yeah, 7 years, actually. Yeah.
Seven.
I mean, I was there for that magical 94 campaign, you know, when they beat Italy in the first round, Ray Houghton goals. It's crazy. But I mean, since then, I think they only made it back for 2002. And it's kind of died with, you know, the whole generation of players, Roy Keane, Dennis Irwin, Robbie Keane, Damien Duff. After those guys retired, there's been nothing from them.
The love has gone. It's gone.
Yeah.
All right, gents, let's start chronologically because we missed a couple of days, but it's all right because we all love football, don't we? And France stumbled over the line and into the last 16 with a 1-0 victory over Peru, while Denmark were held to a 1-0 draw against a plucky Australian side. Marco, did you fear the worst for Australia when Denmark took the lead in under 10 minutes?
Yeah, I did. But, I mean, Australia, they're no longer the whipping boys that they once were. You know, this is a team that in 96 or 95, I believe, got hammered by Brazil 6-0 and without breaking a sweat. And now they've got, when you watch them play, there's a structure to their play. There's a logic to how they pass the ball around. And you know, these teams have nothing to lose when they play the World Cup. You know, if they can make it past the first round, for them, it's almost as good as for other teams winning it.
No, I agree. Absolutely. Adrian, VAR came into play, not for the first time in the competition, when Australia were awarded a penalty for handball. I've seen this incident at least 12 times. I'm actually really not convinced it was a penalty. What did you make of it, mate?
I think VAR has been overall a great addition for the incidents that it's got right. You know, you look at, I think there was, the Neymar penalty, for example, that was initially given and then ruled out. And I remember there was one in a second game which the referee did initially give, and then it went to VAR, and then the right decision was given. So I mean, generally it's been good, but I think there was still a little bit too much that is ultimately the buck is being passed with the decision making. You know, the referee's missing something, and then the VAR then intervenes, and it's just a case of VAR's opinion over the referees, you know. So I think there's still a little bit of work to be done, but I think, you know, when it works well and something that's missed is then given, you know, I think it does, you can see exactly what it's going to bring into football and why eventually it will be a success once all those kind of teething problems are ironed out.
The thing is, they say that, you know, it's a penalty if the hand is in an unnatural position. I didn't see anything unnatural about it. What was your first reaction when you saw it, even in slow-mo?
I don't know. They're difficult because I mean, there was one in the game today in the South Korea game as well when they concede their penalty. The defender slides in and he's got his hand up, and you know he's got his hand up and he blocks a cross coming into the box. And you can kind of understand why it's given. it's really difficult. I think ultimately if they get a second look at it and they decide, you know, if I had seen that first time as a penalty, then, you know, you can understand it being looked at again second time and decision being given.
Marco, Christian Eriksen's goal was a thing of beauty, mate, and he's definitely going to have to be in top form in the final game against the French. Now, I know a draw will be enough to see the Danes qualify ahead of Australia, but they can't take any risks, can they?
No, and a lot of teams are finding themselves in a position where they have to win, but at the same time they have to manage cards, they have to manage injuries, and I think that any team that goes into any of these matches with caution is going to end up paying a pretty heavy price.
Fair enough.
Fair enough.
Now, Argentina's hopes of staying in the competition hang by a thread after suffering a 3-0 loss to Croatia. Nigeria's 2-0 win over Iceland makes the clash between the two a must-win game for the Argies. Adrian, Iceland's head coach was wary of Nigeria's pace going into the game, and lo and behold, the pace and the counter-attack absolutely killed his side. Now, that being said, both goals from Musa were top draw, especially the first, weren't it?
Yeah, they were, and I mean, that was a great and much-needed result for Nigeria, because they were poor, really, in their opening game against Croatia. It was almost like that. There's a lot of talk about Nigeria, partly because of their kit. You know, I think they beat Argentina in one of their warm-up games. I think they might have even come back from 2-0 down to 4-2. You know, they had a half decent second half against England. A lot of players that are well known over here in this Nigeria squad, and there's a real letdown. I think their opening performance against Croatia, they really did need that result. The two Musa goals were excellent. The first one, that touch from the cross, I think initially people were saying it wasn't deliberate, but then you know, I don't know, you watch it again, maybe the second or third time, you think, oh, maybe he did need it. I think if anything, it was a cross that wasn't intended for him, but he's made something out of it. And obviously the composure that he showed for the second goal, you know, after the pace that took him past the defender, the composure when he had the option, I think, to pass to Iwobi possibly, or maybe it was Iheanacho, I can't quite remember. And then he had two defenders on the line to beat as well. He showed great composure in the box there in that big moment, you know, towards the end to settle the game. So great performance, great impact from Musa, who's obviously brought in after the first, a big result for Nigeria.
That's right, and even though they're very dangerous going forward, they've conceded two penalties in both their games. Not obviously each one in each game. Now, each one of them could have been avoided, as they were absolutely needless, in my opinion. And I didn't see any danger whatsoever, to be fair. Do you think this is a concern, and do you believe they maybe lack a bit of discipline at the back?
I don't know. I'd probably have to watch them a little bit more before saying something like that, just because there's been a lot of penalties full stop in this tournament as a whole. So I wouldn't want to sort of make a bit of a rush judgment on something like that. I mean, the problem with the penalty they conceded and obviously got away with I think that might be the one I was talking about earlier on, where it looked like the ball was running out and it was given after a VAR, I think.
That's right, yep.
If I remember correctly. So, you know, initially they got away with it ultimately, and then it was only the VAR that ended up, you know, getting that penalty for Arsene Wenger, and then obviously put over the bar. But I wouldn't rush to say anything about him disappear just yet with Nigeria. It might be a little. I'd probably have to watch him a little bit more before I was comfortable saying something like that, I think.
Fair enough. Marco, Sigurdsson's penalty miss sealed Iceland's fate, but how have they been met in South America?
Everybody was getting behind Iceland because, I mean, they're... European football has become very prevalent here on television stations, and you know, in a globalized world, everybody gets to watch everything. And I think they made a really nice impression during the European Championships, and people have kind of like saying, "Look at this country with a couple of hundred thousand people living in them. You know, that's smaller than some boroughs in Brazil," and that people find that a very endearing quality. And I mean, obviously, after they got that draw against Argentina, you know, it, as far as the Brazilians go, that got a lot of points. So I think that everybody admires the way they play, this carefree kind of approach. You know, they fight, they don't care who their opponents are, they do their best, and people just get on board with that.
Fair enough. That's nice. Right, let's do an Argentina post-mortem, shall we? Because I know Marco's been waiting for this for good few hours. Adrian, prior to Croatia's opening goal, the game was actually quite cagey with a few naughty challenges. Now, it needed a moment of magic or brilliance to change the scope of the game. We got a beautiful volley from inside the box, although Caballero won't want to claim the assist. It was downhill from there for Argentina, wasn't it?
Shocking. They were awful. They were really, really bad against Croatia. If you watch the last goal, you just see that the players are ambling back while, you know, Croatia basically just take their time to walk that ball in. It looks like there's something obviously not right with Sampaoli, with those players struggling to get the best stroke, anything out of Messi, arguably the best player ever. I mean, that's a real humbling defeat, and it's a real knife edge now for them trying to get out of this group. I mean, they can obviously still do it, but you know, Nigeria have shown out how good they can be, so you know, it's an uphill task for Argentina now.
That's right. And you know, I'm glad you mentioned the third goal where the Argentina players were literally walking back. I mean, I know the game was effectively up, but there was no effort. They had zero interest in tracking any man, really. I don't know whether it's just a mentality thing or whether they just can't be bothered anymore.
I don't know. I mean, it's very difficult to say. I mean, since obviously that game Thursday, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the quality of players Messi's got around him. Whether there's, I think I heard somebody in some of the post-mortem talking about Dybala saying how difficult it is to play with Messi because you know that all the time you've got to look for him almost regardless of what situation he's in and what situation you're in and what situation your other teammates are in. So there's obviously something not quite right in the way that they're being set up to play. And I, you know, obviously, yes, with that third goal, as you say, the game's done. But you know, you wouldn't have expected Argentina to get hammered in such a way, and then be going into the last game of their group, really looking like they're going home.
That's right, Marco. As a proud Brazilian, I assume you have zero sympathy for Argentina. But take nothing away from Croatia, though. They put in a performance. Well, I think for me, that's actually the performance of the tournament. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I picked Croatia to be one of the teams that I would not be surprised if they made the final. They have a solid team from post to post. The fact that Argentina are on the ropes amuses me as a Brazilian. It breaks my heart as a Barcelona fan. But Adrian was right. He said Argentina were disgraceful on the pitch. And if you look at them, they don't have any leadership. There's no midfield. This is something that Cesc Fabregas was talking about on one of the British football shows. I don't remember which one. I just saw the video on YouTube. He was talking about how Argentina were playing with five forwards and five defenders and no midfield. And this is a team that at one World Cup, you know, you had players like Fernando Redondo, you had Juan Sebastian Verón, players who could stop the game regardless of what situation it was in, could read what was going on, and slow it down, speed it up as needed. There's no control in that team. And everybody looks to Leo Messi with a desperation to give him the ball, expecting him to pull something out of the hat. And if you compare that to, you know, the eternal comparator for Leo Messi, who is Cristiano Ronaldo, the Portuguese players, they look to him with hope and with confidence every time they give him the ball because they know he's going to do something, and all they have to do is put themselves in the right place. With Messi, there's just desperation. Every time they give him the ball, nobody positions themselves. Nobody's there for a pickup. Nobody's there to, you know, to pick up a lofted ball. It's completely a mess. And the reasons for this complete breakup in the Argentine locker room, you know, this isn't something new. This is something that dates back maybe two or three World Cups where the Argentinian Federation hasn't done a good job of managing players and managing and picking their managers. This is, I think, maybe the fifth or sixth manager in 8 years. And there's no continuity. There's no work ethic. There's no system. It's completely broken.
Because when you look at Messi's performance in the tournament, I know it's been absolutely picked apart on social media. Now, if you take Messi out of the equation for a moment, there are other players in the squad that actually could and should step up. It just seems to me that Many of them actually happy to hide behind Messi and let him take the blame for the results. What do you both make of the whole situation, Adrian? Is Messi kind of like the shield to protect these bullets being shot at the players?
I mean, yeah. I mean, obviously, he would be, as you said, he's one of the greatest players ever. And if you've got him in your team, I think you're well within your rights to look to him as inspiration. But, I mean, there's only so much he can do. And I'll say this with one of the things I've noticed in the first couple of games, well, I suppose everyone's probably noticed, there's only so much he can do playing in a team with that defence. You could see in probably the first 15, 20 minutes against Iceland in their opening game, they were awful defensively, and a team with Caballero in goal, Marcus Rojo, who's hardly kicked the ball, and basically Otamendi, who's had a decent season at City, as you see with that moment of indiscipline when he got booked against Croatia, he's still got that, well, indiscipline, to use the word about Nigeria, he's still got that indiscipline in him. And if he's the best defender, if he's who you're looking to lead your defence, you've got problems. Caballero is an accident waiting to happen. That accident duly happened against Croatia. I remember watching him in the FA Cup semi-final against Southampton. Couldn't hold anything. He just couldn't parry a shot properly. And he ended up getting a real lucky escape with a ball that he tried to catch in his chest that he needed to either punch or catch, you know, above his head. And Southampton, I think, equalised with a ball that, you know, goal got ruled out. But just a mess at the back, really. And some people, because of Messi, because of the firepower, because they're able to leave out players like Icardi, I know a lot of people were saying Argentina could do something, but I remember watching that Arsenal game, and within about 15, 20 minutes, just deciding that no chance can these guys win the World Cup, not with that defence.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any team ethic, work ethic there. And Marco, there's a story doing the rounds that the Argentina squad has basically sacked Sampaoli and they want Jorge Buruchaga to step in before the Nigeria game. Now, true or not, there's obviously something fundamentally wrong with the camp. It seems like a very, very toxic environment at the moment.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, the environment has been toxic. Not even before Sampaoli. The Argentine Federation has been in a disgraceful state for the last 4 years, but I mean, like, there's word leaking. If you follow the Argentine press, newspapers like El Clarín, they're talking about how the players don't talk to Sampaoli since the friendly matches before the World Cup. You know, the players, they've been like kind of like giving him the silent treatment. And you can't really question Sampaoli's competence too much, because he did achieve significant results when he was the manager for Chile, when he was the manager for Sevilla. But I mean, there's no excuse here, because every other manager going into this World Cup has had more or less the same amount of time and the same number of matches to figure something out. And I think even Sampaoli had the advantage of playing more tournaments, because they had the Centennial Copa America as well as the Copa America as well. So he had an extra competition to play, whereas the European teams only had the European Championships, and the other countries had whatever continental competitions they had. So there's no excuse. There's no lack of time. It just, something is completely wrong in there. I think that players like Messi, Aguero, and if you know the interview that he recently gave, where someone actually asked him if, you know, what he thought about Sampaoli's comments about him and Messi being able to play, and he basically told the reporter, you know, oh, he can say whatever he wants, and just walked off. And that can't be leaving a good impression with anybody watching.
No, I agree with you, mate. And the thing is, when you look at this Argentina squad, right, they've got players that, you know, play at the highest level. You know, these aren't like second division footballers. Like, as Adrian mentioned, you know, Otamendi, Caballero, Fazio is playing in Serie A, Rojo United, Mascherano, so many caps, you know, so many trophies under his belt. And that's not even to mention the five forwards that Fabregas was talking about. For me, it just seems that a complete overhaul needs to be done. You've got what they call a golden generation. Well, I don't know what kind of generation this is. Maybe it's bronze or maybe wooden spoon by the look of it. Because I'm seeing players like Di Maria isn't doing it at international level. Higuain isn't doing it at international level. Aguero isn't doing it at international level. You know, you can throw as many stats as you want about Argentina getting to finals or Copa Americas and World Cup finals. Bottom line is, you know, no one remembers the losers. And that's what they are. They're losers at the moment, you know. So I don't think it also helps that Maradona is always at these games as well. I don't know, maybe it's a psychological thing for the players, you know, with him being there. I don't know how much of a boost it will give them, but I think it's affecting them in some way. But, you know, that's just a little suspicion I have. But going back to what I was saying before about these footballers, you know, that they've won things and played in so many games and big games. Perhaps it's time for the Argentine FA to sort of say, right, you know, six of you can go because you're not pulling your weight, and we're going to back Sampaoli because he's got more at international levels. I don't think that's ever going to happen, but could it be a good idea, Marco?
In theory, it could be a good idea, sure. I mean, you're better off having 11 players who will follow your command and will follow a tactic than players who are going to try to maverick it and do it on their own. But, I mean, it's like saying, you know, who has the stones to cut a Leo Messi? Who has the stones to cut a Kun Aguero? And then if things go wrong, and I mean, you have to remember, you have a 1 in 32 chance of winning the World Cup. So it's a 31 in 32 chance of you going home and you just getting completely lambasted by the press, by who he took. I think, I don't know who I hate to use this term, but I don't know who the cancer in the system is in there. If they could excise it, fine. But I don't know. Maybe the cure will be more dangerous than the disease at this point.
I think there's more than one cure in that team, to be honest. But anyway, it is what it is. Right, so while Argentina have landed flat on their faces in pig shit, Brazil ground out a 2-0 victory over Costa Rica. Now, like the big bad wolf, Brazil huffed and puffed, but unlike Mr. Wolf, they were actually able to get away with the bacon. Late goals from Coutinho and Neymar gave them the points in a game that they had to, and you can tell I've been telling my kids nursery rhyme, right? Marco, your boys were quite wasteful in front of goal again, but I guess it would be more of a concern if they weren't creating chances. I mean, the scary thing is, they haven't even moved into second gear, have they?
No, they haven't. A lot of the players are suffering from the effects of, you know, of a long European season. Most of these players were playing up until the last round. Players like Marcelo, Casemiro were playing the Champions League. These players have a lot of hours, a lot of minutes on the pitch, you know, on their log, and it's taken its toll. Marcelo did not play a good game against Costa Rica. Casemiro played a good first half, a poor second half. There's a lot of wear and tear. But as I said, I mean, compared to the first game against Switzerland, like that game, Brazil has a very stubborn approach when it comes to playing teams that play a really tight defense. And the team, in my opinion, wasn't the right 11 to play. If you're playing a tight defense, you need a player who can break lines. That would have been Douglas Costa in the first game. Thankfully, it was him against Costa Rica. And while he was being pegged to start against Serbia, and now he's picked up a muscle injury and he's out for the game. But, I mean, compared to last time, we're in a better position to make a decent challenge, I think, because there isn't so much reliance on Neymar or on any specific players. And Chichi, Brazil's manager, put a lot of emphasis on bringing up not necessarily the best 23 players, but 23 players that will give him options and tactical variances when needed.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Adrian, two goals for Coutinho so far in the competition. His goal on Friday came following a run from deep, something we're not actually used to seeing from him. Now, Barca are using quite sparingly this season, so do you think this has actually played a part in his form?
Well, possibly. I suppose that, you know, talking there about how many minutes some of the Brazilian players have got under their belts, I suppose because of that, he maybe hasn't got as many. I think he probably also benefit from maybe the kind of spread of talent that Brazil have. It will, you know, the focus on Neymar. Neymar got hacked to pieces the other day against Costa Rica, didn't he? And I mean, that's going to allow, if you've got somebody like Neymar to be aware of as an opposition player, it's going to allow the other players to flourish. And obviously, Coutinho with his two goals so far has taken his chance. What I'd like to know actually is, I wonder what the views are on, you know, Gabriel Jesus has started the two games up top and currently, and obviously Firmino came on and played a really important role in that. In Coutinho's goal, the one that broke the deadlock, it came so late. I just wondered what the views are on Gabriel Jesus and Roberto Firmino kind of dilemma for Chiche.
What do you reckon, Marco?
I think that in theory they're vying for the same position, but they offer different things. Gabriel Jesus is somewhat more of a good dribbler. Firmino is just, he's just been on fire this season. I think that, I mean, there is a pressure from the press to replace him for Gabriel Jesus at this point. But again, at the same time, you know, Gabriel Jesus wasn't, while he wasn't scoring goals, wasn't creating a lot of chances, he was drawing defenders and he was, you know, keeping defenders on their feet during the game and trying to open up space. So, I mean, there's a possibility of playing with all four of them. You know, I'd like to see that against Serbia, especially because Serbia have to beat us in order to qualify. So I'd like to see that. Sure, try it. I mean, you've lost Douglas Costa, and you're not going to be able to replace him with Willian necessarily, because Willian, unfortunately, him and Paulinho have taken the worst of the negativity from the press and most of the Brazilian fans at this point. Paulinho, because he hasn't been able to produce the kind of football that people remember him having, and Willian because he seems to have these lapses in attention at key moments, and he's not a very good player to break lines and break defenses. He's good on a counterattack, which might make him useful against Serbia, but we don't know what Chichi has in mind for that game.
Marco, when you think about how Serbia were against Switzerland, in fact, how they are, how physical they are, we've seen Mitrovic brilliant defenders, you know, with Matic in the middle of the park, obviously with you know, the youngster that's linked with practically everyone at Lazio, and then you've got the two central defenders. Do you think Brazil are going to be a bit weak at set pieces against these guys?
Well, it depends on how Chichi is going to pick the squad for that match. I'd say there's a reasonable chance he's going to start Finlandinho in place of Paulinho and kind of, you know, bulk up the midfield and try to hold the ball as much as possible, and so to avoid, you know, Serbia using their main weapon, which is their strength and their height. Thiago Silva seems to be like in a cool zone at the moment. He's not making mistakes. He seems to have everything together. Miranda worries me because, again, he's got these little moments, like these lapses in attention. To me, the goal against Switzerland is 70% on him, 30% on oh my God, what's our goalkeeper's name? I completely forgot. Just blank on
Alisson.
On Alisson, because Alisson, I think he should have gone out for the ball, but whatever. I mean, it's these little mistakes that can often, you know, cost you your World Cup. But, I mean, if that's the case, we have Marquinhos as well. You know, Marquinhos is strong, he's fast, could always play with three center backs. It's possible. I mean, you've got enough players to make these kind of changes if needed.
That's true. And speaking of Chichi, I mean, it's a much different Brazil we're used to seeing, in the sense that there isn't, well, there's a bit of emphasis on keeping things tight at the back and hitting teams on the counter as opposed to just going for it gung-ho. I mean, Chichi isn't your conventional Brazilian coach, is he? I mean, he's the one that guided Corinthians to the World Club trophy against Chelsea, wasn't it?
Yes, he was. Again, this is, he's kind of like a midterm between what the approach that Carlos Alberto Parreira had in 94, which was highly defensive and basically Romário Bebeto, you know, doing the counterattacks, against maybe what Zagallo would have done in 98 with Denilson, Ronaldo, Rivaldo, all of those guys. Football has changed. And the idea of just going forward and attacking and not caring, you know, it's the whole mentality that people in Brazil used to talk about, like my father and my uncles used to say that, you know, oh, it doesn't matter how many they score, we'll score more. You know, that doesn't work anymore. It's a completely different animal now.
Absolutely.
Is he helped by having somebody like Casemiro available? It's such a, you know, you talk about that idea of everyone just bombing forward. Casemiro, that's just not his game, is it? So you've always got somebody in that midfield who you can kind of almost rely on to stay back and keep an eye on what's going on behind. I mean, do you help having somebody like that in such generally good form over the last few years for Real Madrid, sort of nailing down his importance to Real Madrid and then being able to bring that to Brazil?
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Casemiro, he has that position that you would have seen if you recall the 94 World Cup. Mauro Silva had that role in 94. Cesar Sampaio had that role in 98. In 2002 was Gilberto Silva. 2006 was Emerson. 2010, Felipe Melo. And in 2014, that would have been Luis Gustavo. And so Brazil has gotten accustomed to having somebody with more of a defensive focus. somebody to, you know, to keep the, keep an eye on what's going on and not get caught with their pants down.
Quite literally. Right, Brazil aren't through yet and face Serbia, knowing a draw will be enough. Now, the Serbs lost 2-1 to Switzerland in a very entertaining encounter, which saw Xhaka and Shaqiri celebrate their goals with a provocative double eagle celebration. Now, Adrian, politics aside, it was some game, wasn't it?
You know what? Actually, that game, I really enjoyed that game, actually, last night. It was one of the best ones, obviously, along with the Spain-Portugal game, actually. You know, just the way it swung from Serbia being in control in the first half, and then kind of, you know, Switzerland turning it on in the second and turning the game around. It was a great game, and obviously when you go a finish like that, with a last minute goal, then it just kind of adds to the feeling that, you know, one of the games of the tournament.
And what about that Mitrovic penalty appeal? Because, you know, we've seen it time and time again. There's two men literally wrestling him to the ground. Can you understand the logic behind not using VAR?
No, not at all. But that, the more you watch the replay for that, you just think how on earth is that not a penalty? The same with the two against Harry Kane. You know, it seems like VAR not interested in holding in the box. You know, the guys who are watching that. But I mean, I struggle to make any sense of how they can see that incident. All three, really, the two on Kane and the one on Mitrovic, and not think their penalties is bizarre. I mean, two men wrestling into the grounds. Strange.
Yeah, that's right. And what about the goal celebrations? I didn't really want to go into that too much because I'm not 100% sure about the politics behind it. But obviously, it's upset the Serbs. What did you make of it when you saw them?
It's an interesting one because, I mean, there were a few articles written before this game about the tensions between the two and the kind of political backdrop to the game. Now, those celebrations are obviously premeditated. So, and you know, it just so happens, obviously, that those two guys are two of the players with the biggest kind of links in terms of the political element of the game. They're the ones who score the goals. So, I mean, they would have known, you know, as soon as they did it, you think, okay, fair enough, you wanted to make a point, fine. You might know, or, you know, those two players must expect that there will be talk about those celebrations and potential repercussions sort of from FIFA, but still they wanted to make their point. I saw an interview with Lichtsteiner basically just saying it's pretty much up to them. You know, they're the ones who have gone through everything, them and their families, and it's about more than just, you know, winning a game of football. There's obviously a lot more to it. And if they feel that that's how they want to make their point and they're prepared to accept any repercussions that may come, then who are we to tell them not to do it, I suppose. It's one of those where it's effectively then it's their choice to make because they're the ones who have that sense of it's more than football. Yeah. I wouldn't be comfortable lecturing them on something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but at the end of the day, I mean, we know that politics and football don't mix, to be fair, and I think it's very silly of them to do so. But anyway,
that's why the trouble and punishment may come from FIFA. And they'll have to take that on the chin, but I suppose they'll have the satisfaction of knowing that they scored against Serbia and they managed to make their point on behalf of their families and their nation and other people who suffered.
Mm. Yeah, but you know, knowing UEFA,
whatever fine comes their way might be a small price to pay for the point that they were able to make.
Well, do you know, knowing UEFA and the way that they go on sometimes, they will probably get fined more than if they made a racist comment.
Quite possibly.
Well, look, speaking of those two players, Marco, Xhaka's goal was an absolute belter, while Shaqiri showed exactly why Liverpool are interested in him, mate. They're massive players for the Swiss, aren't they?
Absolutely. So these guys are going to be highly sought after in the transfer market during the summer. You know, Switzerland have been knocking on the door for the last three World Cups, and it's starting to come together for them. You know, these countries who, you know, don't necessarily have the benefit of having a production line of star quality players like Germany, like Brazil, like Argentina at some point, France at the moment, Spain to a lesser extent. But you don't really need that. You don't need 10 mega players to win. You need a solid squad, and you need a couple of players who can take opportunities when they're given to them. And Xhaka's goal was crazy. I mean, the amount of goals being scored from outside the box in this World Cup is impressive. I mean, we just had one a couple of hours ago.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good segue then, Marco. Very good. I like what you're doing here. So Mexico ground that a 2-1 win over South Korea, booking their place into the last 16, while the Germans live to fight another day thanks to a super free kick from Toni Kroos. Adrian, I know we just about got our breath back now. It reminded me of Thomas Hessler's goal in 92 for the Germans against the CIS. Last minute goal, equalising goal. I know Cruises was the winner, but high pressure situation. But things, I also remember when the initial Germany squad was announced and people were saying, oh, they can put out three decent teams. But let's be 100% honest, decent doesn't cut it at this level, does it? They've really got out of jail tonight.
Massively, and Germany has been pretty bad, to be honest, in this tournament so far. That last-minute free kick papers over a lot of cracks. By all accounts, there are a fair few issues in that squad, with sort of arrogance, complacency, sort of bad attitude. And I think, to be honest, if you look at their two performances, you can see that. Jerome Boateng was saved from himself when he got sent off. Mm-hmm. I don't think... him today was probably the worst performance you've seen in division from anyone in the tournament. And to be fair, where the guy who gave away the free kick, Chris scored the winner from, probably running close with his little cameo, I think, Durmaz, when he came on. He had a nightmare, pretty much just giving the ball away, and then that lazy challenge at the end to give away the free kick. But Germany, yeah, as you say, gets to fight another day, but very, very, very lucky. Very lucky to still be alive in this tournament.
That's right, and Marco, we knew exactly what to expect from Sweden, mate. And no matter how much the Germans knocked on the door, they got in twice eventually. But Sweden were really unlucky not to win two penalties, though. I question the Germans' hunger in Jazar on Wednesday's show. What's your take on them?
I think that, I don't know if you could accuse the Germans of being complacent. I think that this mixed squad isn't really working out for them. I think I always argue that World Cups are often circumstantial, and that it's not really about mixing youth with experience. You need to have all the players clicking at the right moment in order to win. And it happened for them 4 years ago. It isn't happening for them now. I mean, the last two games, Toni Kroos is the only one who seems to believe that football has to be played. In theory, Germany have an amazing midfield, but they're weak at the back, and their strikers have just been ineffective.
That's right, mate. And I'll tell you what, there's a team that's been very, very effective in this competition is Mexico. And Marco, is a big win for them today. They dominated the game until Son pulled one back. This team is so much on a high at the moment, in terms of the confidence. If Donald Trump was to build a wall, they could break it down themselves, couldn't they?
Absolutely could. Hey, and there was that Simpsons episode, right? They predicted Portugal versus Mexico. At least Mexico are doing their part.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. What do you make of their campaign so far? They've impressed a lot of people, to be fair.
Yeah, Mexico have always had they've always been fiery. They've always had talented players, and it's very rare for a side like Mexico not to get to the knockout stage. It's when they face slightly stronger teams that reality sets in. But I mean, they took down the Jolly Green Giant, didn't they?
That's right. But I'll tell you what, it's coming up to a really exciting end of the group. Germany obviously have their fate in their own hands. How do you both think that game's going to pan out between Sweden and Mexico? Because something tells me there might be a little agreement here, especially with the way that there was afters between the Sweden bench and the German bench at full time. Do you think Mexico might just roll over a little bit, Marco?
I would not put it past them. I wouldn't put it past them at all. I wouldn't even put it past Croatia to do the same for Iceland.
Now that would be something, wouldn't it? What about you, Adrian? Can you reckon a bit of naughtiness happening?
I don't know. That's a big accusation to make against somebody. I would say
it's a guess. It's a guess.
Mexico have been one of the best teams so far in this tournament. I think in Lozano they probably had. I mean, obviously, Lukaku, his four goals, Ronaldo, there have been other players who stood out, but I think Lozano's probably, without meaning to sound like he's a new name, because he's not, but I think he's kind of reputation, no harm, I don't think, with his performances in this tournament so far. I think he's been a real bright spot, a real threat, really direct down the left, and obviously he's done a little bit down the right as well. And I don't know, I just think he's really stood out to call my eye. Lozano. So, you know, Mexico, yes, they got 6 points and are effectively they're through already, but I mean, to suggest that they might throw a game, I'm not too sure. Maybe once they get wind of what's going on in the other game, they might feel a little bit more confident taking their foot off the gas possibly.
Very, very good diplomatic comment there.
I don't want any trouble.
Don't blame you, mate. Don't blame you. Don't want any cartels after you. Give you that for now. Let's end it with England's group. And Belgium gave Tunisia a right hammering today. It was 5-2. It could have been 6, 7, 8, 9, you name it. Batshuayi could have had 4. It was one of those games, really, wasn't it? The game was over, effectively, after 20 minutes, Adrian.
Yeah, it was. It was, but then I suppose when Tunisia just come back into it and kind of make it 2-1, you think, oh, okay, what's going to happen here? But I mean, as you say, I mean, Batshuayi, I think, had 6 chances, 6 very, very good chances. Some strikers won't get as many chances in the whole tournament as he had in sort of 20 minutes on the pitch today.
Could have the golden boot, couldn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Belgium looking good so far with the 8 goals. Possibly they'll be disappointed when 2 they let in. Maybe a little weakness there that teams, you know, maybe even better teams can exploit later on in the tournament, but they've kind of laid down a marker winning their 2 games, scoring 8 goals, sharing the goals around as well, and having Batshuayi able to come on and have such an impact is another promising sign for them.
That's right. Marco, I'm not going to, you know, pee on Belgium's parade. They've scored 8 goals in 2 games, which is absolutely incredible. Lukaku's got 4 goals. Hazard is on fire. De Bruyne is doing what he does best. But I think defensively, they've got deficiencies, mate. We saw from the first goal, Boyata's positioning was awful, playing everyone onside. And the second goal, I know the game was effectively over, but Kasri had time to make a cup of tea, didn't he? Can you see Belgium getting at least to the semi-finals or possibly even winning it?
I don't think... Look, it's you need to take into account who they've played. They played Panama, right? And they played Tunisia. Okay, they hammered them, fine. But they conceded goals. And they haven't been tested yet. I mean, again, Belgium is... We're always waiting for Belgium to, you know, to emerge from whatever ashes they were in and take it all. But their performance hasn't been 100% convincing. I mean, they can score goals, but I don't know, like you said, if they can defend well enough. And I've been reading the newspapers all afternoon, and apparently Lukaku, Hazard, and Mertens picked up an injury, allegedly, during the game. So, I mean, I can see England beating them.
Wow, that's a bold statement. Very bold statement there, mate. Very, very bold. Adrian, speaking of England...
It's interesting there, what you say about Belgium defensively, because, I mean, just from watching a lot of Roberto Martinez sides in the Premier League, I actually think that their biggest problem might actually be Martinez. The way he plays, the way his club sides played, yes, great going forward, defensively not the best. That could be maybe you could put that down to the players he's had and the clubs he's been at. And obviously, if you look at a defence that's going to have Alderweireld and Vertonghen and possibly Kompany when he comes back, you'd think that's obviously that's certainly. In terms of name and quality, that's better than anything he's had club-wise. But I think you still got that concern when you look at them, for example, today, and the chances they gave away and the chances Tunisia had and the 2 goals they scored. I think I am a little bit concerned about how Martinez might shape up in the bigger games against bigger opponents.
Yeah, I see what you mean there, mate. The thing is, as I said, the defensive organisation would concern me quite a bit. You know, Alderweireld and Vertonghen are absolutely fantastic, but it sounds ridiculous, but I think they really miss Kompany.
Yeah, and any team would. I mean, to be honest, actually, even Alderweireld had a couple of shaky moments today, actually. Wrong decisions and, you know, they weren't costly, but if you're just watching each game closely, there's little kind of slips and errors and mistakes that maybe he wouldn't have made at club level, but he did make today. And to be honest, I think Kompany, in the nicest sense, is a freak, because he has this strange ability to miss, you know, long periods of the season, loads and loads of games, and then he'll come back in and he'll play as if he's been playing for weeks and weeks and weeks. So any team would miss him. And I must admit, I wasn't Kompany's biggest fan for a very long time, but I've kind of grown, you know, I've come round to seeing how influential he is. You know, he's a great great defender, but you know, you see the influence he has on his team. Any team would miss him, and that ability to kind of stamp his mark on a defence and lead them, he'd be lost to anyone.
That's right, mate. That's right. And let's end the show with England, eh? Because, you know, I think for once it's actually good that the emphasis isn't on, you know, the players and how they perform. It just seems to be about little things like tattoos and team lineups being leaked. I think Gareth Southgate has handled it remarkably well. The players don't seem fazed by it. I think it's a very, very harmonious atmosphere within the camp, isn't it?
Yeah, he tried to defuse it today, Gareth Southgate, by almost apologising for the stick that some of the journalists would draw on social media for one leaking or reporting on the, you know, Steve Holland's notes, and obviously a lot of my colleagues obviously been defending why that was done, and Gareth Southgate took it upon himself to try and maybe defuse the whole situation by effectively, you know, Steve Holland's apologised, and now he's basically saying, no, those guys have got a lot of sticks, sorry about that. Effectively, it was our oversight for having that sort of information on you in an open training session. So that should hopefully just kill it all off. You know, if Gareth Southgate was annoyed, obviously the nation as a whole would keep, you know, having a go at journalists, and then there's that kind of them and us, but he's tried to kind of get rid of that effectively, I think, and just try and put the issue to bed. And hopefully everyone could just move on now.
That's right, mate. And tell me something. What do you know about Gareth Southgate in terms of his relationship with the press? Because some people have told me that, you know, not that he's their biggest fan, so to speak, but he deals with them much differently to how he deals with, you know, say, people within the media or like television.
I think Gareth Southgate the reason why his approach, or one of the reasons maybe his approach is the way it is because he's seen it from both sides. He was obviously a player at major tournaments. 96, I'm pretty sure he went to 98 as well, World Cup 98. So he's seen the role the media can have and the role they do have. And I'm sure that's influenced the way that he's wanted the media to be. I'm sure that he would have seen the division grow between players and the press in his time as a player, full stop, not just with England. And obviously he's decided to take an approach and try to bring it a little bit closer together. And we'll obviously hope that will have an impact somewhere along the line. You know, all these managers don't do anything for no reason. So I'm sure there'll be something that he's hoping to get out of it. And time will tell. I'm sure he will tell maybe come the end of the tournament if he gets out of it what he wanted. You know, for example, everyone's been talking about the kind of open day they had, which I think is quite NFL style, where they made all the players available at St. George's. Things like that have not been seen before, so there's obviously something he's hoping to get from opening up the England players, not just to the press, because what he's doing by using the press is opening them up to the fans as well. You know, the fans are getting to learn more about these players. With it being all 23 players, there'd have been players who spoke that day, some people have never heard from, don't really know too much about. You know, you don't often hear some of their backstories, so you know, he's obviously trying to humanise the England team and himself a little bit as well, and we'll hope that will pay off at some point down the line.
Fantastic. Well, gents, thank you ever so much for agreeing to come on the show. It's been fantastic talking to you both. Marco, thank you especially for jumping on. I don't know what time it is in Brazil, but I guess it's pretty late.
6:30.
What's that?
6:30 p.m.
Oh, okay, well, it's pretty early then. It's not a special thank you then. It's a special thank you to you, Adrian, for coming on the show.
No worries, until any time.
But honestly, it's been great talking to you both, and I hope you guys have been enjoying the World Cup, and let's do this again sometime soon.
We'll do. Thanks a lot, still appreciate your time.
Fantastic. Well, guys, those of you still listening, you can follow us on Twitter @ShoesDefence. We have a Facebook group page. So until next time, take care.